And here's what we got. After 3 years of ignoring him, President Macron of France calls President Putin to talk about peace in Ukraine. Why is he calling? Maybe it's because Trump told him to do so. Or maybe it has to do with the fact that Russia has taken now full control of Lugansk, and it's about to do the same in Donetsk and Zaporizhia and Kherson. And there's more. Remember those mineral rights deals that Mr. Zelensky sold to Mr. Trump? Well, guess what? The Russians just took control of one of the biggest mines. You're gonna see it. I'm gonna show it to you right here on The Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez, and we're gonna begin with the call, right? For 3 years, President Putin was waiting to get a phone call from Emmanuel Macron. Well, finally, that call came. And it lasted about 2 hours, we're told, as the leaders talked about Ukraine. They also talked about Iran. No big breakthroughs, by the way, were reported, at least none that we know of yet. But as the Russians have always said, and they've been pretty consistent about this, we'd rather be talking than the alternative. Unfortunately, most of the time, nobody wants to talk to him. At least that was the case with Mr. Biden, for example. Now, Macron is doing something different. Now, why did this happen? Well, we learned yesterday in our bizarre story that I shared with you about Candace Owens and Brigitte Macron that President Trump met with Macron not too long ago, and he told him, he said, I need your help to solve this conflict in Ukraine. I need you to get involved. Was that why Macron picked up the phone and called Putin? Or was it because Macron is sensing that he's about to be on the wrong side of history? Think about that as you look at this headline. This is the headline that Macron no doubt read when he woke up this morning. People all over the world are reading this headline. This is not a Russian account, by the way. This is not from TASS or something like that. These are newspapers and broadcast networks all over the world that are reporting that Russia's military has taken Lugansk. They're also saying it has 70% now of Donetsk, as well as Zaporizhia and Kherson. Now, think about that, all right? If Zelensky would have agreed to a peace deal that was offered by Russia back in, was it like February or March of 2022, Russia would have had less than half of what it would have right now. But because they decided to go along with Mr. Biden and the NATO officials and what they wanted, Ukraine is kind of in a bad place right now. Now, here's how Western analysts are characterizing this latest Russian takeover of Lugansk.
This is a big political win for Vladimir Putin. Not Donetsk fully, but it looks like it's heading in that direction. But for Moscow, this is major. This is a big morale boost for the Russian Federation, for Russians in general. And so they have, you know, a tremendous amount of reserves that are, they're already trained and ready to go. And they will be deployed to stabilize some of these regions. So you could very well see somewhat of a summer offensive and fall offensive by the Russian Federation in many of these areas that have seemed to have been kind of really slow progress over the last couple of years. And then they have the assets to be able to help to, you know, hold those territories behind them, behind the front line, and to manage them. And so now that domino's fallen, you know, that now Russia, for security reasons, will want to secure Kharkiv. They will want to settle that and then also to move west. So this is I think, a big moment. This is symbolically and morale-wise, it's huge.
So they're no longer in the capture stage. Now it's about securing the areas that they already have. That's what you heard. And why is Russia right now moving forward so aggressively, right? Well, analysts say it's because it's been given no other choice. You see, there's been a small cadre of officials that are representing NATO who have been promising more money and convincing Zelensky to fight on. Don't give up. Don't stop. Turn down Russia's negotiation offers, for example.
I think the message that comes out of this summit is clear. NATO's commitment to Ukraine endures. And it is now in the summit declaration with a clear link to the money, and I think that is important for the next 5 to 10 years. Not that we expect the fight to take so long, but that whatever is necessary, we will keep you in the fight.
You just stay in there 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it takes. We'll just keep giving you money. Never mind that he's running out of soldiers if he hasn't already. So while NATO's doing that you just saw right there with your own eyes, the U.S. apparently is going in the other direction, because the U.S. or the Trump administration just dropped a bomb on Zelensky with this announcement.
The NewsHour has learned that the United States is holding back weapons that the Biden administration and the last Congress marked for Ukraine. This comes as Russia has made territorial gains in Ukraine in recent days and blasted the country with unrelenting drone and missile attacks.
So that's really bad news for Zelensky's government. But guess what? There's even more bad news for Zelensky's government. Remember that deal that everybody was talking about all over the world, where Mr. Trump did this deal with Zelensky, and Zelensky essentially was selling him or offering him the rights to these huge mineral deposits, right? Let me show you it. Because we've got maps to show you just how big these things are. They're very important, probably as important as anything in the world in terms of value right now. There it is. There's a total of 4 known huge lithium deposits in the area. Well, guess what? The Russians have just seized the biggest one. You can see it right there. See it? That's right. In fact, here's the report.
Russian troops have seized one of Europe's most strategic assets, a vast lithium deposit near Shevchenko in Donetsk. This isn't a mere territorial advance. It's a takeover of a future-defining resource. Spanning 40 hectares, the site holds 13.8 million tons of lithium ore, essential to weapon systems, EVs, and global tech supply chains.
All that news could not come at a worse time for Zelensky's government. Because Russia's military seems unstoppable right now, as it's continuing its unrelenting summer offensive assault, which is likely going to continue now, they say, right into the fall.
Based upon the reality of the battlefield, Russia has brought this war under control, Russian control. And just imagine how difficult that is, because Russia's fought several iterations of this conflict. Its initial engagement had a big political component to drive Ukraine to the negotiating table. That's a completely different kind of warfare. And it succeeded. They got Ukraine to the negotiating table within 6 days of initiating the special military operation. And within a month, they had successfully negotiated an agreement to terminate this conflict on terms favorable to Russia, but also favorable to Ukraine. If you compare and contrast the options Ukraine is facing today in Istanbul with the options they had back in 2022, man, they'd die to have those 2022 options available to them, but they missed that opportunity.
Scott Ritter is just one of many, many military analysts from the West, by the way, who say that this war could have been over many, many times in the past if the West had not pushed Russia to continue. Russia, according to these military analysts, has tried to stop this many times, has tried to pull back, but they've never been given a reason to stay back. He says Russia is ending up with a much bigger stake of Ukraine than it originally even wanted to have.
The proof in that is that Russia, in their negotiations with Ukraine, said we have no intention of holding on to this land. And as a good faith measure, they began the withdrawal. They actively withdrew from around Kiev, Chernihiv, Sumy. They were in the process of withdrawing in Kharkov. 50% of the Russian forces have been pulled back from the front lines in Kharkov as they were preparing to make a withdrawal back to the Lugansk borders. And that was exploited by Ukraine in the West with a $48 billion injection of military aid and assistance, the rebuilding of a Ukrainian military with Western training, and they carried out an offensive. But one of the reasons why the Ukrainians had great success is because the Russians weren't there.
This is a really important day historically, you notice something that I've done. I don't know if you've noticed the way we prepared this newscast for you. None of the people who you've seen talking about this thing are living in this part of the world. They're all living in the Western part of the world. There are all reports from people in the United States, in parts of Europe. So that's where this news is coming out of. And now I want to introduce you to somebody as he walks into the studio. Come on in, Igor, who actually knows this area. This is RT correspondent Igor Zhdanov. And guess what? He's been there. He's been to this region that we're talking about. And he's going to be telling us what it's actually like there, what it smells like, what it looks like, what it feels like, so that we can understand places like Lugansk, for example. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
It's a pleasure.
So glad you're here.
My pleasure.
So how big is this news? Because I'm looking at these headlines in Reuters and the New York Times and all over the place saying, that's it. These oblasts, as they're called in this part of the world, are now all, either officially or almost officially part of Russia. How significant is that?
Well, if you're talking about the Lugansk region, it is very significant, and not just militarily, because militarily I can talk for days about just the one town, small town of Belogorovka, which is a dominating height there. And the Ukrainians, they have been utilizing it to their advantage so heavily, and they've been flying drones from over there because, again, it's the height, so it makes the range much wider. But also, pretty much every such piece of information that, well, leaks into Western media, this is something that Zelensky and his crew, his retinue in Kyiv, this is something that they don't want. Because they... The United States...
So he hates these headlines.
Of course he does. He's losing territory.
Yeah.
I mean, of course he does. At the same time, his job right now and his task right now, it's a matter of his political and maybe even physical survival, is to convince Europe to stay in this war, to keep giving him weapons, to keep giving him money, because the United States, they're almost all but out. Yeah. I mean, they've already halted the supply of some weapons.
But let me stop you there. If all Russia really wanted at the beginning... And according to Ritter, for example, it wasn't even what they have now. They would have settled for less. I think they were going to settle for less in March of 2022.
They were.
Right?
Yeah. So we all saw those documents.
If all they wanted was those four, they pretty much got them. I mean, this thing is... You know, I mean, put a fork in it, it's done.
But it's not even, it's not just about those four regions, because remember, Russia has a foothold in the Kharkiv region. Russia is expanding its foothold, is expanding its presence in the Sumy region of Ukraine.
You know, let's do this, because you're talking about stuff, and there's people watching us have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Do we have that map of those four regions? Let's put it up so that people can see exactly, and take your time. Okay, there we go. Here we go.
So there we go. These are the four regions, and you can see the little red spots in the north of that map. I mean, the Sumy region, there Russia is creating something of a security
belt. Those are the two that are still green. In other words, that's not conquered land yet, for lack of a better
term. No, but I mean, but Russia is making steady advances in the north, and that was not part of the deal. That was not a part of the deal back in 2022. Russia did not want that. In fact, Russia pulled out of the Kyiv region. Russia pulled out of the Chernihiv region of Ukraine, so Russia actually made concessions back in 2022. Now that time is long gone. That time is
gone. But wouldn't you argue that Russia has to take, or feels like it's compelled to take, Sumy and maybe parts of Kharkov simply because of what the Ukrainians have done, hitting the railroad, for example?
Absolutely.
Attacking Kursk, for example?
Absolutely. And this is the very reason why Russia is doing it. And remember, for the Russians, you mentioned it earlier in the program that the Ukrainian army has been starving for people, has been starving for men to, well, man the trenches over there. For Russia, it hasn't been the case. I mean, another thing that Zelensky doesn't want you to see, doesn't want the world to see, are all these videos of, ordinary Ukrainians being shoved into buses, into vans, and just being forcefully mobilized in Ukraine.
I think the whole world has seen this.
They have. Yeah. But Zelensky doesn't want you to see that. Now, for the Russians, Russia is not forcefully mobilizing anybody. In fact, according to the figure that just, well, it emerged today by the deputy head of Russia's Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, and the ex-president of Russia, basically, in the first 6 months of this year alone, more than 200,000 people volunteered to join the Russian armed forces, and 18,000 more, they joined Russian so-called volunteer corps. So,
well,
this...
you know what that is, right? I mean, I'm just thinking, it's easy to join the winning side.
Well, fair enough, yeah. But I mean, it also puts things into perspective.
If I had to choose right now between joining the Ukrainian army and the Russian army, you know which one I'd join, right?
Yeah, fair enough. That's a fair point. So you have that. And also at the same time, the Russians, they have just crossed into the Dnipropetrovsk region of Ukraine, which was also not part of the deal. And Russia never said that it wanted Dnipropetrovsk. But right now, the war is going on. And for instance, we talked about...
I think what you're talking about... You know, in the United States, we call that momentum.
Yeah.
It's like when a team is winning and everything just starts going well. You play basketball, probably, right? Or soccer, whatever sport you play. You can't miss. Like, you start throwing the ball up and it keeps going. And it's like, my God, what's wrong with me? That famous Michael Jordan look. Like, what the heck is going on? It almost looks like Russia is on a roll right now.
Yes. Yes, it is. And also, keep in mind that while we were showing this map just now, those gains, they might look minuscule on the map, but every single region that Russia gains a foothold in, for Ukraine and for Zelensky, that's a massive PR, hit that they take. Right on the button, you know? So it makes harder and harder for them to sell this idea that Ukraine still has a chance in this war. And I mean, it's money. Money talks. You always follow the money. And if Europe is investing into this war of Ukraine, into Ukraine, Europe wants it. Isn't its that, dividends,
you know, but
doesn't it?
Do you know what's really weird? I got to tell you, I don't know if you had the same thought. I was just looking at that shot that I put up for the viewers of Rutte and the other members of NATO, and they have Zelensky there. And I'm asking myself, what the hell is he doing there? He's not a part of NATO, but he's sitting there like this, like he's Mussolini or something. It seems confounding, doesn't it? Like,
well, he has...
So NATO's now is all about Zelensky?
Well, he certainly wants it to be all about him and all about Ukraine.
Well, I want it to be about me, too, but they didn't invite me or you.
Or me. Yeah, right. Fair enough. He has been trying to sell this talking point about how Ukraine is right now doing the NATO fighting, and it's only because and solely because of Ukraine, Russia hasn't attacked any of NATO member states, really, which Russia hasn't really... Russia has long been saying it has no interest in attacking Estonia or Latvia, and Russia has never had a problem with it. The biggest problem that Russia has had with Ukraine and what sparked this special military operation is of course, defending their own people, defending Russian-speaking citizens, defending their rights, their right to just speak their native language in Ukraine, and also at the same time to stop Ukraine from joining NATO, because Ukraine was talking about the possibility of obtaining nuclear weapons, of bringing back nuclear weapons. That is a huge red line for Russia. Bold red line.
Well, so, and I'll give you another one. I'll never forget when I was doing RT America. I think it was when I was doing RT America in Washington. And I saw video of military exercises in the Black Sea. Yeah. And you could see Russians with their families on the beach having a day at the beach, and helicopters and patrols and powerboats and bombs dropping, not real bombs, but, you know, doing the military exercises. And I was thinking, imagine, Igor, if somebody was doing that where I'm from, in Miami Beach.
Yeah.
Or off the coast of Florida, or in the Gulf of Mexico, if China or Russia were saying, okay, we're going to do military exercises off your beach today, that would not go over so well.
No.
But that's one of the things that was going on just before this.
Yeah, yeah. And so this is the reason why Russia is in this fight. And again, Russia is making gains. I mean, I'm always in touch with the boys who are out there in the trenches, the boys who I have been working with for years now, since 2022, really. They're optimistic. They have now, of course, it's a very difficult job. And of course, I mean, losses, they exist and they happen on both sides. But Russia, as you rightly pointed out, Russia is on a roll. Russia is relentless. And I mean, now Ukraine has to defend those territories. It didn't even think that such a need would arise for Kyiv. They didn't predict it. They don't have solid defensive lines there. Like, they expected a big battle to emerge over the town of Pokrovsk. Russia is flanking it.
Is Pokrovsk in Russian control yet?
No, not yet.
But I mean, about to be?
I mean, well,
because I've been hearing Pokrovsk is about to be in Russian control now for almost a year.
Pokrovsk is right adjacent to this lithium deposit.
Why is Pokrovsk so important? So
it's important. It's important because it's a major town of like 80,000 people, which is big for Donbass, of like 80,000 people. So it's a major logistical hub for Ukraine. But yeah. Right now, if this cup was Pokrovsk, so the Russians have flanked it like this. So even delivering supplies there and. A lot of Ukraine's logistics, it rests on Pokrovsk. So just
is Pokrovsk big enough for us to say, pardon me for interrupting you, just thinking, is Pokrovsk important enough for us to say that as Pokrovsk goes, so will go the war? In other words, once Russia gets Pokrovsk, we're like close to the end?
I'd say that would be a major indication that Ukraine's days, the days of the Ukrainian armed forces in Donetsk region of Russia, they are numbered. Because right now it just ties together too many things. Yeah. I mean, it's like the rug and the Big Lebowski, really. It ties together too many things for the Ukrainian armed forces. And so the Ukrainians, they expected a big, major Mariupol-style battle for the town of Pokrovsk. But now the Russians, they are flanking it. They are already breaching and spilling over into the Dnepropetrovsk region because that's where the border is. So they can just, you know, close that and the town would be encircled and then Ukraine will be left with, they will still have several key cities and towns there, but that would make the situation very, very difficult for the garrisons there.
By the way, one more movie or sports reference and we're going to start getting letters from viewers. But kidding. This is a very important question that you're the perfect person to ask. Based on everything that you know about this region, you've been covering this war now for quite some time. You've been there. You've seen it happening. Do you see a way that the Ukrainian forces can turn this thing around?
No. I really don't. Unless, I mean, the Ukrainian forces right now, I mean, if they could, they would have done so already.
Yeah.
I mean, they can only turn this thing around if they get some, I mean, only if they get really NATO soldiers, if they get reinforcements out of NATO countries, and that would be used as a casus belli by NATO, by the whole alliance, to join the war physically against Russia. But I don't see that happening right now, not with Donald Trump and in the White House. And I mean, they have been reluctant to do so. Even if you look at Europe, if you look at NATO states in Europe, there's no consensus, there's no unity as to how the alliance should handle this whole situation. Even a peacekeeping force, it caused debates. So I really don't see that. So it's just prolonged and extended suffering, extended torture of Ukraine, really, and Ukrainian population, Ukrainian men and women and everyone.
You feel sorry for him. It's a horrible,
horrible
situation.
Extended torture, that's what it is.
That's what it is. And unfortunately, it's being caused by people who don't really care about Ukraine, have nothing to do with Ukraine, don't know the people of Ukraine, and are very far away from Ukraine in places like Paris and in London. It is so great to be able to have this conversation with you, Igor. Thanks.
Absolutely.
You're a great correspondent. You've
Thank
done
you.
Great
Thanks
work
for having
over
me.
The years. Of course.
Thank you.
And I'll have you again. And as you recall, I've had you in the past, but it's always been via satellite.
Voice in the ear. You've always been a voice in my ear.
Thank you, my friend.
Cheers. Looking forward to you.
When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation. I'm going to introduce you to one of my favorite writers, somebody who has written about everything going on with this situation. So today's the perfect day to have him on. Sergei Politaev is going to join us right here. He's an analyst and publicist, and he's the co-founder and editor of Vot4 Project. We'll be right back. So we've painted the picture for you of why this is such an important day, why these news stories that have been taking place over the last 48 to 72 hours, culminating yesterday with the announcement of what's happening in Lugansk is so important, and why it's receiving coverage all over the world. What we'd like to do now is specifically talk about this region, those four oblasts that many of you, if you're watching us from Delhi or you're watching us from someplace in the United States or someplace in Europe or in Australia or wherever it is that you are, You don't know this region, and you keep hearing people throw out these words, but what is this place? Who are the people who live there? What do they want, for example? So let's start with this. Let's put it up one more time so people can see this part of Ukraine, which Russia has now essentially taken, and why they have done what they have done. There you see Kherson at the bottom, Zaporizhzhia, then you see Donetsk, and Lugansk there at the very top. We're also going to talk about the other two there. You see Sumy, that's the region next to Kursk, which is where you may have read in the news that Ukraine went into Russia. That's that Kursk region of Russia. And then Kharkov. Is it Kharkov or Kharkiv? I'm always saying, is it? Well, you're the expert
Russian
on this. Let me introduce my next guest. This is Sergei Polyataev. He is a writer. He is the founder of a very important publication here called the VAT4 Project, and he's good enough to join us to talk about this. So let's start there. I want people to understand, Sergei, these four regions, who are the people who live there? Who are they? What do they want? What do they dream? What's going on in their lives right now? What are they seeing? Tell me about them.
Well, I'm sure that right now all they want is peace. All they want is to quiet, to be quiet, to skies to be quiet, mm-hmm. No shelling and no war on their land. And generally speaking, they are Russians. They are Russians. These are
Let me stop you. I've heard that said before. Those people who live in those areas are Russians. But I've also heard people say everybody who lives in Ukraine is really Russian.
Not everybody.
What's the difference between the people who live in those four oblasts and the rest of the people who live in Ukraine?
Let's put the map back.
Yeah, you want to put it back up?
Yep.
Let's put it back up and you could talk about it specifically.
You know, the Ukraine is some kind of gradient. So from very Russians on the east, mm-hmm. to not so Russians in the middle, and right. Maybe some Hungarians, some Polish influenced people on the east. The Ukraine was assembled from different parts.
So as you go further,
generally speaking, yes.
Right.
Generally speaking, yes. But Ukraine was 350 years in Russia, partly, mm-hmm. and Ukraine was in these borders for, I think, 70, 60 years as a part of the Soviet Union. So the cities are very much like any other Russian Soviet city. You can't say which city is, let me put it in this way. You can't say which city is more American, New York, Chicago, or LA.
Right.
All right? Mm-hmm. Here is the same story. You can't say which city is more Russian or Soviet, if you will, mm-hmm. Moscow, St. Petersburg, or Kyiv. There are some differences, but Kyiv is, is very much the same Russian, Soviet, big country city as anyone as...
Let me ask you about...
Odessa or Kharkov. Kharkov is, I think it's more Russian than maybe Krasnodar, for example. Yeah.
Let me ask you about...
I've been there.
What has happened in these places since the Russian military has all but taken them over? In the case of Lugansk, it may be completely done. The Reuters is reporting, for example, in Donetsk, it's only 70%. But still, there is a Russian presence there now. And I'm told that in the last 2.5 years, Russia has not only taken it, but actually built out the infrastructure.
Sure,
they've created roads, hospitals, schools.
Sure.
True?
Some say that in these 2.5 or 3 years, it was done more than in 30 years of Ukrainian presence there.
Hmm.
Maybe not about Donetsk. Donetsk was the richest city in Ukraine because all the Ukrainian money was earned there. Not all, but the very significant part. But right now, if we take Mariupol, for example, It is the second largest city in Donetsk region.
So this is important, and I think this is why this is important. So the people who live there are being funded by the taxes that are collected by the people of Russia who don't live in those four oblasts. So in other words, they're benefiting from the Russian Federation. The Russian Federation is creating their infrastructure, paying for their schools, paying for their roads, paying for their security, etc.
Well, it's not one-way road. These are good industrial areas. So when all that industrial facilities will work again, they will earn money for themselves and for the Russian budget as well.
So you're saying eventually those four oblasts will be as productive as almost anything in Russia, for example?
When the war ends, sure.
So
I have no doubt about
that. Which brings us to this deal that I just showed a little while ago. Mr. Zelensky did a deal with Donald Trump. Donald Trump was excited about the fact that that area that we showed is one of the most mineral-rich areas in the entire world. So
in Europe, for sure.
Yeah, and the fact that apparently the Russians are now taking those mines, for example, over, and they'll probably take the other three as well. How does that bode for Zelensky and for Ukraine?
Well, I'm sure he didn't think that way. You know, because for Zelensky, it's not about earning money. It's not about Ukraine doesn't earn money at all right now.
Yeah.
For Zelensky, this war is for keeping the Ukrainian project alive. And the Ukrainian project is to be anti-Russia. Ukrainian project is to be anti-Russia.
That's it?
Yes.
Pretty simple.
Pretty simple.
But it doesn't come from him. It comes from NATO, right?
Well, it came from the core of Ukrainian nationalism. Mm-hmm. Which, so when...
Ukrainian nationalism.
Nationalism, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nationalism.
Those are some really bad guys, and many of them were very corrupt, and some of them were oligarchs, right?
Well, most of them were communist...
back during the Soviet
yes,
era?
Yes, communist bosses. But, you know, it's very natural. When... Let's put again for our viewers the example from the United States. Let's imagine
right.
California secedes from United States.
Right.
Let's imagine.
Yeah.
So they have to explain for their own new citizen of California why they are different, why they are now citizens of California, and why they should support the new government of California, new California Republic. All right.
Right, right, right.
So,
right.
And they will explain, they will find some facts, they will make some facts, they will... why they're different. And this inevitably leads to conflict with the rest of the country.
I was speaking yesterday...
It's natural thing.
I was speaking yesterday, Sergei, to the former prime minister of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And he told me something interesting. He said that in many ways, after the Soviet Union changed, the Russian Federation had problems with corruption as well. There's corruption everywhere. But Mr. Putin has, for the most part, tried to dial that back, and he's made some of the oligarchs and some of the people who stole a lot of money here by taking over industries that didn't really belong to them, give some of that money back. But he told me that in Ukraine, that did not happen
yes,
as well.
Yes, they did not happen.
The bad guys kept being bad. And those bad guys, I've read in reports, you tell me if I'm wrong, in many ways are the ones who went to Zelensky after Zelensky was elected and told him, we need you to go after Russia. We need you to be aggressive with Russia, because they hate Russia, most of those guys. And a lot of them, I don't want to go into the whole Nazi conversation, but a lot of them have almost those Nazi-ish type of tendencies. True or false?
I will say that they exploited the Nazism for their own benefit.
Hmm.
And they did it very cynically. So
how cynically? What do you mean?
Well, for example, do you remember that guy Yanukovych?
Of course.
Yes, and he was. It was told that he was pro-Russian.
Right.
But the backers.
This is the president of Ukraine prior.
Prior Maidan.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
And it was.
And he was replaced by the chocolate president.
Yes, by the chocolate president.
Right.
So he was backed by the same oligarchs, the same guys that essentially started the war. And that oligarchs, they put him into the office. And at the same time, they created their own pocket armies of fighters, of national fighters. So that is the cynical way.
What do you think?
Why? To keep him under control, to overthrow him if they will need.
So
it's as simple as that.
That setup I just gave is basically correct. He became a puppet, not just of NATO, but a puppet in many ways of those internal forces inside Ukraine.
Yes, but I am sure there was no conspiracy. There was just stupidity, okay?
On his part?
No, on the part of the Ukraine elite. They made this. They didn't want to start with war. They didn't want to,
Wait a minute. Did they really think that Vladimir Putin...
Back then.
But did they really think that Vladimir Putin would allow them to do military exercises in the Black Sea?
Yeah.
Would allow NATO to come in and put in military infrastructure? Would allow NATO to consider taking back Crimea?
Yeah, simple as that.
And just sit back and go, oh, okay, if you guys want to do that, you can do that?
Simple as that. And when...
Why did they think so little of Mr. Putin's... commitment to not allowing that to happen?
Well, it's easy to explain everything with stupidity. But, the underestimation of your enemy, it's a very common thing. It's a very common thing. And it was very naive from their point of view. Then they were absolutely sure that NATO will fight for them. Isn't it naive, no?
Yeah. You mean they expected that the West would come in and fight the battle for them. That, don't worry about it. We'll never run out of money. But that hasn't worked. Even the money hasn't been able to stop the Russian military, as we're seeing today, yesterday, and the day before in these reports that are coming out now, right?
Yes, we're slowly grinding, and we're slowly... it is the war of attrition now. It is a very sad thing.
So how do you think... Let's get to the finish here. How do you think this ends?
Well, there are two ways for Ukraine. It is for Ukraine now to decide their own fate.
Yeah.
They may go for peace in 6 or 12 months, I think. Go for peace at the Russian conditions. And they will keep their country. Or they will keep fighting and they will lose the country
altogether. So right now...
So there will be some... It is very bad way, and for us as well, because there will be some big Gaza Strip, if you will.
So you think right now, and I spoke to Mr. Medinsky about this, and I get the feeling that this is what he would settle for, but I want to hear it from you since you've been following this and you're one of the intellectuals here who's been following this situation. If right now Russia could get the following things: a security deal that NATO is not going to be a part of Ukraine, a security deal that doesn't allow NATO or any other Western country to put forces or any other kind of military structure inside Ukraine, and they're able to get an agreement that guarantees that Ukraine will be a sovereign, neutral country, those three things, then Russia would settle for those four oblasts that we just showed people in the map. They would walk away and say, we're good. We got nothing
else. Yes, it is not for the war for the land. It is the war for Ukraine not to be anti-Russia. All right? So, and they should... the Ukrainian state should restart. As some kind of new land, not anti-Russian, neutral one, and I am pretty sure that the only way it can be done, if they will do it themselves. So if they say the same Ukrainian elites that did all this stupid stuff will say enough. We don't want to kill ourselves. We don't want to kill anymore our country. The only way to keep alive, to keep our country, is to make deal with Russia. If we make the they Ukrainian, if they break with West,
yeah.
So I'm not sure if it's possible, but it is my dream, and it is would be the best scenario for us, for Ukraine, and for the world.
Putin said himself recently in St. Petersburg that in many ways the Ukrainian people and the Russian people are one people. They've been that way historically, and that's the way he'd like to see it, which is, by the way, and I should add this as we conclude this conversation, and I've said this before, when you look at the number of civilians killed in this war, it's very small.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about that.
Yes.
It's only, now I sound like Trump, nobody talks about this but me. You know, 11 to 13,000 civilians who have died in this war, compared to how many have died in Gaza, compared to how many died in Iraq and Afghanistan,
well,
it's crazy.
Every life counts.
Of course, of course.
But yes, it's a primary military conflict, not the total war. It's and it gives hope as well.
I agree with you. We'll see how it goes. It's a great day to have you here. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for stopping and visiting with us. It's been a really good conversation. And there really is a lot going on, and we're going to continue to stay on top of it and watch as it develops. That's our news. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us. And remember, you can follow us right here as well. I have a podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking. It's doing really well. Many of these conversations, like the one I just had with Sergey, we put on there. And then we also add a bunch of bonus stuff so you can catch it. Or you could have a conversation with me when I check in with you on X or Twitter or whatever you call it these days. It's Rick Sanchez TV, by the way. I'm him, Rick Sanchez. Thanks for being with us, and I'll be looking for you next time. Thank you.